Welcome, everyone, to this IBM Support Technical Exchange presentation. Today's topic is Service Integration Bus Best Practices and WebSphere Application Server. The presenter is John C. Kalla. John C. has been working for IBM for the last 12 years. She joined IBM Support in 2006. In 2012, she started supporting Service Integration Bus and WebSphere Extended Deployment Group of products. Since 2015, her focus has been on the WebSphere Application Server CET Level 2 support team. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John C.
Okay. Thank you very much, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. This is John C. Kalla from WebSphere Application Server Level 2 team. Thank you very much for taking time and attending this session, Service Integration Bus Best Practices in WebSphere Application Server. This presentation is intended to be mid-level technical, and I hope audience has some basic knowledge of Service Integration Bus and its functionality. Not only WebSphere Application Server customers use Service Integration Bus component, but also other IBM stack products like BPM, ESB, WPG, Lotus Connections, WSRR, and many other IBM products use this SIP component internally. So this presentation also applies to all those stack products wherever it uses Service Integration Bus component. You may need to apply these best practices, depends upon your business requirement and what is important to, for you. All these best practices may or may not applicable to all of you. You need to pick the most and best suited best practice according to your business needs and what is important to you and what is important for your environment. Let's move on to next slide, slide number two. Slide number two, agenda. In this session, we will cover most common best practices in WebSphere Application Server. This presentation is made based on the problems, what we see from customers in the form of PMRs. In our day-to-day working on PMRs, we debug and troubleshoot customers' issues, and most of them are related to the configuration and runtime issues. Most of them are resolved very easily by configuring the SIP component properly and following the SIP best practices. In this presentation, we will cover these best practices. If you follow these best practices, you can avoid most of the common issues in your environment, and in addition to that one, you get the stable environments. Second bullet, how to tune the SIP component to get maximum outcome. That is a SIP performance tuning to get maximum out of it. How to improve the performance by selecting the proper SIP policies according to your architecture and your business needs and your environment. The raster other WebSphere runtime components that affect SIP performance and how to tune them. This is the agenda for today's session. Let's move on to next slide, slide number three, introduction. We all know that SIB is the default messaging provider in WAS 6 onwards, WAS 6, 7, 8, 8.5, 9, and future WebSphere products also. Many WAS stack products use SIB as their base product, as I mentioned before starting of this session. So this technical exchange also applicable to all those stacked product component products wherever they use SIB as their base component. We will also cover few things which are not available in the Knowledge Center, WebSphere Knowledge Center, formerly we used to call as Info Center. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 4. SIP tuning levels. There are different ways we can configure SIP in order to improve the performance and in order to get the stable environment and the best outcome of it. These are the different things we could do: configuration, runtime, and producer side and consumer side configuration or best tuning setup, what we can do to in order to get the best outcome and good performance and stable environments. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 5. SIP policy options, HAP scalability. Before entering into the this content of this slide, I would like to explain what are the different SIP policies which are available to customers. One is the high availability. If you see the screenshot, those are the four different SIP policies when you add the cluster to the bus. High availability, that means this, which is the default one. By default, it creates only one messaging engine, whatever the number of JVMs inside of that messaging cluster. And it high availability, that means it creates one messaging engine and it will have the opportunity to fail over to the other JVM within that messaging cluster and fail back. And the second one is the scalability. The scalability, that means, for example, if you have three JVMs inside of that messaging cluster, it creates the three messaging engines and one messaging engine per JVM. But messaging engines can start at any JVM available during that any specific point of time for HA manager. And the third one is scalability with high availability. This is the most stable and very good policy customer. We suggest customer to choose. What happens is in this scalability with high availability, it creates n number of JVMs in a n JVMs messaging cluster. It has the opportunity to fail over to the other JVM when there is anything wrong to the messaging engine or hosting JVM. And the other one is, the fourth one is custom. Generally, I don't see customers configuring this custom config, custom policy. Most of the times, these three are more than enough, the first three. So if you are using the messaging cluster, you can in case of the HA configuration, it creates only one messaging engine in the entire messaging cluster. For example, if you have 10 JVMs still in that messaging cluster, still it creates only one messaging engine. And this is the one single point of the messaging processing messaging engine. So you can avoid the single point of failures by creating and running more than one messaging engine. So let's say we have seen many customers, they have more than 7 JVMs and only one messaging engine. What happens in that scenario is messaging engine is hosted in only one JVM and remaining 6 JVMs send the messages and consume the messages from that single messaging engine. So the JVM which is hosted the messaging engine is heavily loaded from the request by all the remaining JVMs to get and put the messages. That creates a lot of load to that JVM. Sometimes we have seen many customers in production environment having this high availability single messaging engine that crashes the JVM because of the too much load, and sometimes it hangs and sometimes it crashes. So if it crashes, then messaging engine is also, sometimes it may fail over to the other JVM, but most of the times if it hangs or something happens wrong or performance is delayed and message processing is becomes slow because of the heavily loaded JVM. So in order to avoid that one and in order to improve the performance, we even at the high availability configuration, we always ask customer to add more messaging engines, at least two messaging engines. So So if something happens wrong with one messaging engine, then the other messaging engine can take the load and at least that can process the messaging functionality in that entire SIB messaging cluster. So we always ask customers to manually add messaging engines in case if they configured the default high availability policy. And that is one point. In addition to that one, we always recommend customers to have scalability plus high availability policy if your architecture allows. So here, the bottom line is the best practice we suggest to customers is to improve the throughput and scalability of the messaging functionality, add more MEs to handle very large number of connections and rely on remote put to forward the messages to the SIP destinations. Moving to next slide, slide number 6. Okay, preferred servers only option. This is the screenshot of the core group policies from that specific messaging engine. Here, if you see at the right side of the screenshot under additional properties, the preferred servers option. If you want to run the messaging engine on any specific JVM, some customers choose this option because if they have 10 JVMs and out of 10 JVMs, 2 or 3 JVMs are very powerful in terms of the heap, in terms of the CPU, or for any reason if they want to run the messaging engine on specific the servers, they add those servers to the preferred servers list. If you add those preferred servers list, HA manager always try to start the messaging engine in that preferred servers if available. If none of the preferred servers are available, HA manager start the messaging engine on any other JVM which is available. This is perfectly okay as long as if you don't check the check mark here in the green color box, preferred servers only. If you check the preferred servers only option in the core group policies, what happens is, for example, if you have only configured 2 preferred servers out of 10 JVMs cluster. So if one JVM is down, out of 2 preferred servers, one server is down and ME is running on the second available preferred server, in case if something happens wrong to the JVM or messaging engine or anything happened wrong, then HMI try to fail over that messaging engine to the other available preferred servers because you selected as to run the messaging engine only in the preferred servers list. So one is already down and the remaining one which is available is having the issues, so there are no preferred servers available at that point of time. As there are no preferred servers are available, HA manager don't attempt to start the messaging engine in any of the other JVMs because those are not preferred servers and you choose to run the messaging engine only in the preferred servers. So in that case, messaging engine is not able to start because none of the preferred servers are available. So what we recommend to customers is if you choose to run the messaging engine only in the preferred servers only, then make sure that always there are 1 or 2 preferred servers are available, and if in case messaging engine need to fail over to the other server, then you will have the opportunity and HA manager can start the messaging engine on the other preferred server. So here the best practice is configure the custom one-off end policy with different preferred servers. If you configure to run the messaging engine on preferred servers only option for each ME and with the failover option. So always make sure that if you choose the preferred servers only option, there should be always one standby server which is preferred server is available, always. That is the best practice we suggest to customers. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 7. JVM heap settings for performance. This is not included in the knowledge center, info center. So each message residing inside of the messaging engine needs around 400 bytes of the metadata, which is the header in the heap memory. In general, there are two parts of the JMS message. One is the message header. That message header contains the all the message properties like what is the bus, what is the queue SIP destination, and what are the different properties, time to live, and other JMS properties, when is the time put. All these properties contains in the message header. And the second part is the message body. The message body is the actual message which we are sending. So that message header, all these message properties, that occupies approximately 400 bytes of metadata. So in case of the PubSub scenario, whenever the durable subscribers are not active, SIP stores that message for the durable subscribers at its subscriber home location. So if you have 50 subscribers, 50 copies of this message is stored at their specific subscriber home. You have to consider all these scenarios when you configure the JVM heap settings for that specific JVM. And each reference of this durable subscriber consumes around 100 bytes of metadata, which is a message header of the heap memory. So while designing the JVM memory requirements, you have to consider the complete message load, and also consider you have to consider all the failure cases. For example, durable subscribers are not active, and so many messages are in the message store and in the cache, and you have to consider all the complete the failure scenarios when you configure these JVM settings. In general, it is better to set minimum and maximum heap size to the same value to get the maximum performance. If you set the maximum and minimum heap size same, this setting avoid costly JVM garbage compaction operations. If you set the max, JVM max is 4 gig and JVM minimum is 250 megabytes, whenever the JVM periodically that does the garbage collection, whenever there are no object references are exist. So this garbage collection itself, it creates a little bit load to the JVM. So we request customers to keep minimum and maximum same heap in order to avoid this costly JVM garbage collection. And in addition to that one, the message retriever time, whenever any consumer requests the message, SIB reads the message store and runs the search selector algorithm based on the consumer application request. The best way to reduce the message retriever time is increase the JVM heap size so that more messages can be cached in the memory. So here in this screenshot, the proposed heap size I put as 2 gigabytes. The default proposed heap size is 768, I guess. It's 768 megabytes. So what we suggest is best practice here is configure the sufficient JVM heap to avoid hangs or out of memory during the message processing. If you have enough, we have seen many scenarios from customers. They configured very low heap and they saw the JVM hangs and out of memory during the very high peak loads and too much traffic for the messaging environment. So we always suggest minimum 2 gigabytes or above in customers' production environments. In general, same max and minimum heap size avoids the costly JVM garbage collection compaction operations. This is related to the JVM heap size. So the bottom line is you need to consider all these failure scenarios and message data and how many inactive subscribers, and you have to consider all these scenarios when you configure the JVM heap size for that messaging JVM. Next, move on to next slide, slide number 8. Okay. Balancing message workload. If producer application is connected directly to any messaging engine in the cluster, all messages by default, it goes to that local partition of the queue point. To spread the messages across the messaging engines in the message cluster, you need to choose the below configuration. The default configuration is control. This is the screenshot from the queue configuration panel. So local queue point, under the local queue point preference, the default is the first option, which is the preferred to send the messages to the local queue point, even though that is a little bit performance-wise, it is better, but it won't give you the send the messages across the different messaging engines queue partitions inside of the messaging cluster. So if you want the messages to spread across the different messaging engines, then you need to choose these two options. One is don't prefer local queue point over the other queue points, and message affinity is messages may be sent to a different queue points. Here, the best practice is to increase the message throughput. If you choose these two options, the producer application send the messages, and the SIB inside of the SIB algorithm that takes care of the message spreading across the different messaging engines inside of the bus. For example, if you have five messaging engines in the bus, if you choose this configuration, all the queue points are localized to each messaging engines inside of the message cluster. So in that case, all the, for example, if you send that 15 or 20 messages, each queue point localized at the each messaging engine get the approximately 4 or 5 messages. In that way, the round robin algorithm, the workload management takes care of automatically if you choose this configuration. So here, the best practice we suggest to customers is to increase the messages throughput and workload management across the messaging cluster JVMs. Configure don't prefer the local queue point over the other queue points, and messages may be sent to different queue points in the queue configuration panel. When you set this configuration, and you need to take care of one thing, some customers, they need a message ordering. If you need that message ordering functionality, then don't choose this one, because the message ordering won't happen if you choose this configuration. If you don't need the message ordering, specific message ordering, then this configuration will give you the workload management and workload balancing, and the performance of the throughput is very improved in a better way. Next, move on to next slide, slide number 9. Okay, this is almost the same as the previous screen, but this is the graphical diagram. Here, the cluster has N number of producer applications, and in cluster B, it has 10 or 5 messaging engines. Whenever any application sends the message, it automatically sends across the round robin, and each messaging engine queue partition gets automatically almost a similar number of messages. So in order to increase the throughput and workload management, choose the above options on the queue object panel that points to the JMS destination. This improves throughput a lot, because every messaging engine queue partition gets the equal number of messages. that gives you the good performance as well as the throughput is increased drastically. Next, move on to next slide, slide number 10. Remote put. This is remote put is at the producer side. Let's talk about what is the remote put. The remote put is by default any application, either producer or consumer application, can connect to any bootstrap server within that messaging cluster. So if whenever the producer or consumer, let's say producer application connect to a any bootstrap server, and it is pointing to the, it need to send to a specific queue point, and that queue point is not localized in that specific server, then it, SIB automatically, as soon as you send the messages, SIB automatically send that message to that specific queue point inside of that bus, entire bus, wherever that SIB, SIB queue point, SIB destination is located. So here in this case, in this diagram, the producer application is connected to the server, server one, where the messaging engine one is running, but the producer application want to send the message to the queue, which is called as the name as rally. The rally queue point is not localized on server one. In the queue point is located in the server 2 where the messaging engine 2 is running. But the producer application is connected to messaging engine. So what happens is whenever the producer application send the message by saying, hey, this is the bus number and this is the queue point, I need to send the message. As soon as it gets the message to the SIP bootstrap server, here in this case, ME1 messaging engine 1 in server 1, that automatically create a remote queue point, RQP, which is called as the remote queue point, that automatically get the message from the producer application and send the message to the queue point, which is localized in the messaging engine 2, and the queue point name is Rally. This is called as the remote put. So here in short way, I can say the producer application connected to ME1 and producing the messages to a queue rally localized on ME2. ME1 create a remote queue point, RQP, and to forward the messages. These RQP remote queue points are dynamically created by the SIB internal coding. SIB itself creates automatically remote queue points whenever there is a need, and it automatically deletes the remote queue points, so these are called as the dynamic queue points. Once the message reached remote queue point, then messaging engine 1 send the message to the messaging engine to ME2. Sorry, there is a typo here in this screen. Even though this is a good transparent of the SIP destinations, it eats a little bit of system resources because it has to send indirectly a message from one messaging engine to the other messaging engine. It eats a little bit as it eats a little bit lot of resources. The best practice here is, if your architecture allows always connect to the application locally to avoid the remote put for better performance. If your application is not able to connect to the same messaging engine where the queue is hosted, you need to use this algorithm and make use of the remote put in order to send the message. But the best practice is because it eats a little bit of system resources, try to connect to the local messaging engine where the queue point is located in order to avoid remote put for better performance. Next slide, slide number 11. Okay, remote get. The previous screen is the throughput, the remote put, and here is the remote get. Here, when consuming from a queue point that is not located on the same messaging engine that the application is connected, a process similar to store and forward is occurring. This is generally referred as remote GET. If you see this diagram in this slide number 11, here the application is connected to the messaging engine 2, and the queue is hosted on messaging engine 1, which is on the other server and other messaging engine. So what happens is whenever the consumer application requests for any specific messages, what the messaging engine 2 does is it creates the dynamic destination remote queue point and send a request to the messaging engine. And the messaging engine MU1 and B is hosted on MU1, and this the copy of the each message it send the copy of the message to the remote queue point B on messaging engine 2, and then send the that message to the application. During this process, it keeps the copy of the message and commits and locks the message and send the copy to the other remote queue point on ME2. So here in this diagram, in this, if you see the bullets, these are the stepwise how the message processing happens in case of the remote GET. The connected ME2 requests a message from the messaging engine with the queue point B, which is hosted on ME1. And ME1 selects a message from the queue B, and persistently it locks the message, because the purpose of its message locking is so that no other application is able to get that message. So it locks that message and for ME2 and send a copy of the message to the ME2. This is called as the store and forward. The consuming application receives the message and processes it and commits the receiving by the application. So after that one, ME2 persists the act of the committing the message, and asynchronously that send the acknowledgement back to the ME1 and says, hey, commit it. So asynchronously, ME1 deletes the message and ME2 removes the commit state. So here, this is the process of the remote GET, how it works in SIP. Even though the requested queue point is not localized to that specific messaging engine where the consumer application is connected to. So here, it eats this remote as compared to the remote put. Remote GET eats lot of system resources because it stores the message and send the copy to the other messaging engine and the other message, this ME2 to the application. It eats lot of system resources in order to locking and in order to commit the messages, and this eats a lot of system resources. So here the best practice what we suggest to customers is remote GET eats lot of system resources. For better performance, always avoid remote GET. Make sure your consumer applications are connected to the local messaging engine which hosts the SIP destination. This is how it works, remote GETs in case of the SIP. Next slide number 12. Okay, here this slide talks about what are the pros and cons of the remote put and remote GET. The remote, first let's talk about the remote put. Remote put is in case of the performance wise, remote put is better than remote GET. Remote put is better than remote GET. Here, the advantages of the remote put is transparency of the queue point location. Inside of the bus, wherever the queue destination is hosted, it is visible to every JVM inside of that messaging cluster. Does not require the localizing ME to be available because message production is asynchronous. For example, your application is connected to any Bootstrap server. What is the Bootstrap server means is the chip service should be enabled in that server, and that is part of the messaging cluster, and messaging cluster is a member of the bus. So that does not require the localizing ME to be available, because message production is asynchronous. Whether ME is available or not available in that server, it can send the message to any queue point if it is in the other messaging engines, or where even it does not have to know where that queue point is localized and where that queue point is hosted. And it takes the advantage of the workload management for partition queues. We will talk about the what is partition queue in the next slides. These are the three advantages of the remote put, and the disadvantage of the remote put is additional latency in synchronous, because it has to send the message to one messaging engine and from that messaging engine to the other messaging engine. So we can you should expect some latency in this case. Coming to the remote get, the only advantage of the remote get is transparency of the queue point location, and the disadvantages are consumer latency due to multiple message hops and multiple points of failure, it's very hard to complex, and troubleshooting is a little bit complicated in case of the remote get, in case if you see any message lost or it is taking the lot of delay for the message processing. It's a little bit complex to diagnose that remote get issues. And requires the last point is requires the localizing ME to be available. So what that means is, for example, in the previous slide, the queue point is hosted on ME1, and our consumer application is connected to ME2. If the ME1 is down, if it is ME1 is not running, where the queue point is located, it is not able to get the messages from that messaging engine. So always the localized ME to be up and active and running without any issues in order to get the remote get. These are the pros and cons of the remote get and remote put. So what we suggest to customer is the best practice is configure your system to avoid remote get always. It improves if you avoid the remote get. Your environment is performance is very good, and it's very speedy messaging environment. And it eats less system resources if you avoid the remote get. Next slide, slide number 13. Okay, this is almost the continuation of the previous slide, avoid remote get. Here, in order to avoid the remote get, you can configure these three properties at the connection factory or activation specifications in case of a consumer. In case of other applications, you can use the connection factories in order to configure these three connection properties, target, target type, and target significance. These are self-explanatory, and our knowledge center has good information about these, what these individual attributes mean. The target is the name of the messaging engine or group of MEs to connect. The target type is either bus member, or you can specify the custom messaging engine group. If it is two or three messaging engines, you can specify there. And if you want to specify a specific messaging engine, you can mention under the target type. And the target significance has two properties. One is required, and the second one is preferred. Generally, the default is the preferred. What this means is if none of the target messaging engines are available, it connects to any messaging engine which is available in that specific bus. If you choose required, no connection. For example, if you are trying to connect to the messaging engine 1, and if you choose the target specific significance as required, if ME1 is not available, then connection would not happen. It is not able to connect to the any messaging engine if ME1 is not available if you choose target significance as required. So we always suggest customer to use target significance as preferred. In addition to these three, to avoid the remote get, in this there is a small screenshot in this slide, slide number 13. Here, which is the default, the control across the multiple queue points per message consumer or queue browser. If you choose only this option, only messages on the queue point is visible, which is the default one. If you choose this one, only messages consumer is able to see the messages which to which it is connected to that specific messaging engine. To that specific queue partition. It is not able to see the messages which are available on the other queue partitions which are hosted on the other messaging engines inside of that bus. So here, the best practice what we suggest to customer is only let messages on a single queue point is visible in order to avoid the remote gets and improve the scalability. Improve the scalability, that means you need to add more MDBs and connect those MDBs locally to that specific messaging engines in order to get the local get and avoid the remote get. These configuration panels, this configuration avoids the remote get. Always avoid the remote get in order to get the good performance. Next slide, slide number 14. Always minimize the messages in the message store. So here, we always tell to customer to minimize the messages which are stored in the message store. It could be file store or message store. So minimize the number of messages which are currently stored in the message store and in the cache also. This includes both messages on the queue points and subscriptions and the messages stored for the transmission to the other messaging engines, which are remote queue points. In this remote queue points, that means within the bus, one messaging engine to the other messaging engines, and also the remote queue points are for the other buses in case if you configure the SIBLINK and MQ link. So here, and also the third bullet talks about in a healthy environment, as soon as the message arrives on the SIB destination, a consumer should pick it up. Messages on the SIB destination should be always zero or near to zero. In a healthy environment, whenever there is a message appear, message reaches any SIB destination, a consumer should pick it up. This gives you the very good performance, and here the best practice we tell to customer is don't use queue for long-term storage of messages. We have seen some messages, some customers, they save the messages for long-term usages. And in that case, what happens is, in any case, by chance, if messaging engine is crashed or JVM is crashed or something happens wrong, then when messaging engine starts next time, it does a lot of housekeeping of all those messages. It takes almost a couple of hours if you have millions of messages. So we always tell to customer to keep the queues with the minimum depth all the times. You should not use the SIP queues or any SIP destination, SIP topics for your don't use for your long-term storage. And SIP is not a database. Next, move on to next slide. Slide number 15, data store locking issues. If ME is data store locking issues, this is one of the, we get very frequent PMRs for this issue. If ME is abnormally shut down or connection between the ME hosting server and data store hosting machine is broken, the lock on the data store is not removed automatically. What happens is, for example, whenever the ME starts, it UUID is and instance UUID both are stored in the SIB owner table. Whenever there is a abnormal shutdown or any connection broken, whenever there is a database connection broken, we see the message in the system out logs says J2CA0056I. Whenever that happens, the lock on the SIB owner table is not removed automatically. When ME starts next time, what happens is whenever the ME is abnormally shut down, it HA manager get the that information and it try to start the messaging engine on the other JVM in that same messaging cluster. When HA manager try to start that messaging engine in the other JVM, it send the request to the database or data store or file store in order to get the lock on the message store. If the previous stale lock is not removed and not removed, then it won't allow the new messaging engine instance to take the ownership of the message store, and it won't start because the previous instance lock is still exist on the data store or file store. So in order to avoid this data store locking issues, there are two ways. One is you can ask database admin to remove the data store locking manually, and the other easy way is to enable the keep alive at the database server to lower the value of the 4 or 5 minutes. The default value of this keep alive is, which is the voice level keep alive, the default is 2 hours. What that means is by default it won't remove that socket, and until 2 hours, next 2 hours, it won't remove the lock on that data store. So we always ask customer to enable the keep alive 4 or 5 minutes in order to remove the lock faster, so that the failover instance of the messaging engine can get the lock on the data store. Here, the best practice is configure the keep alive at database server to a lower value, like 4 or 5 minutes, to release the stay lock on the SIB owner table. Keep in mind, when you configure this keep alive, always keep in mind that the connection timeout and transaction timeout when you set the keep alive. If you have configured the connection timeout or transaction timeout at 6 minutes, and if you configure this keep alive 4 or 5 minutes, then all those transactions will be transaction timed out and connection timeout exceptions will happen. So always make sure that this keep alive timeout value is higher than the connection timeout and transaction timeout. So in order to remove any locking issues for the data store, configure this keep alive parameter to the 4 or 5 minutes. Moving to next slide number 16. Enable restrict long running locks. Here in this slide, in WebSphere 8.5, we have added a new locking mechanism which is implemented to solve these locking issues, to solve this problem without need for setting of the keep alive timeout. Just enable the restrict long running locks feature in this messaging engine's message store configuration and restart the messaging engine. Here in this slide, the screenshot talks about where you need to enable this restrict long running locks. Just I wanted to make sure that this long running locks feature is available only in WebSphere 8.5. So what this new feature works does is we have added a new algorithm that ensures messaging engine no longer holds the long-running locks on the SIB owner table. The benefit of this one is active messaging engine now holds only the short locks on the SIB owner table while revalidating its ownership at regular intervals. In a regular intervals, there is an internal table that SIB owner table is updates for every 2 minutes or so. For longer time, if it don't update, then it will remove the lock on the SIB data store, and it will allow the new instance of the messaging engine to get the lock on SIB owner table, and this resolves the locking issues of the data store. Here, the right to own the SIB tables is always performed during at the ME startup. Whenever the ME startup, it UUID and instance UUID both are stored in that Cibonacci table, and there is a, another column, ME last update column, that updates periodically. If it don't update, then it will remove the lock on the Cibonacci table and HR manager failover messaging engine to the other JVM, and a new instance of the messaging engine is able to get the lock very easily without any issues on the Cibonacci table and start the messaging engine successfully from the other JVM. Next slide, slide number 17, detect JVM hang and failover. In this slide, we are talking about the previous new feature which we added, the long-running locks. Here, if you see the MU UUID and instance UUID are stored whenever in JVM, whenever the messaging engine is started. And the next, I'm talking about the table which is in the middle of the right side of that screen. Here, the third column is ME last update. What this means is whenever the active messaging engine that needs to update, update, hey, I'm active for every for a specific time interval. If it this automatically updates, that active messaging engine automatically updates this ME last update and ME status is started. Here, this is how the new feature is. So if you see the diagram here, the server 1 and server 2 are part of the part of the cluster, and messaging engine is started in the server 1, and it successfully started, and something happens wrong. For example, let's say it had a database database connection issue, and we see J2CA0056I, and it stopped the then connection stops, and it won't update this ME last time up. If you see in the bottom of this diagram, ME refreshes ME LUT. What that means is messaging engine last update at regular intervals. So if messaging engine don't update in a regular intervals, then it the SIB internal message internal algorithm it remove the lock on the SIB data store and at the data store side, and at the SIP side, what happens is HR manager moves this messaging engine to the other good JVM, and from the JVM, it sends the request to get the lock on the data store. As the previous lock is removed because of this new feature we added, and it easily automatically get the lock on the message store, and it start the messaging engine without any issues. So here, what we suggest to customer is from 8.5 onwards, enable the feature restrict long-running locks. And one, the note in the middle of the left side of the screen is I have added, if you are updating, migrating WebSphere from 7 or 8 to 8.5, you need to run the SIPDB upgrade command in order to update the SIP message store, so that it the SIP tables use the new feature in WebSphere 8.5. If you are fresh install of 8.5, it takes care of everything. You don't have to run this one. Next slide, slide number 18. File store locking issues. Here, from our day-to-day job while working on the PMRs, we have seen many file store locking issues also. Some customers we see still they use NFS3. As the file store for their clustered messaging engines. So in NFS3 has some locking file store locking issues. Don't use the NFS3 file store. In case of clusters, this is the one point, and the other thing we have noticed is if cluster is a member of the bus, always make sure that all the JVMs has good access to the file store machine. So because whenever the messaging engine moves from one JVM to other JVM, it needs to access the file store from any of the JVMs inside of the messaging cluster. So always make sure that the file store machine is always accessible to the all of the JVMs inside of that messaging cluster. And here I have included two links. One is the third bullet is run the IBM file system locking protocol test. Go to this if you have any questions about, hey, whether whatever the file store you are using is compatible with WebSphere application server or not, then go to this link and there is a test. You can run the test and you can find out whether that passed the test or not. If it don't pass this protocol test, then don't use that file store for this SIB or even for the transaction logs. And in the second link, I have mentioned the link mentioned in the NFS recommendations. Please go to this one, and this applies to SIP file store as well as the transaction logs file system. So here the best practice we suggest to customer is use NFS 4 file or any approved file system for the file store. Next, move on to next slide number 19, data store performance settings. When you are using the data store as the SIB message store, not only from the WebSphere side, in order to get the good performance, you need to tune from the database side also. Generally, the messaging engine imposes mainly performs two SQL commands. One is insert and one is delete. This has to be considered while you are tuning the database tuning. Each messaging engine can request large number of concurrent connections to the database. By design, ME used many threads to perform the database updates concurrently. So make sure that you do some database side tuning also in order to get the more outcome and a quick message processing inserts and SQL inserts and SQL deletes. So ask your database admin and make sure that you are making available sufficient number of database connections to ME is the key to have the better performance during the peak load. Next, moving to next slide number 19. Thread pool settings. Here, the thread pool settings is whatever the screenshot shows, those are the default thread pools which are available in WebSphere application server. In general, these are sufficient, but in case of if your production environment is heavily loaded and if you have so many MDBs, then you may need to reconfigure these minimum and maximum thread pools. For in case of the SIB, the bottom three are the thread pools generally we use in case of the SIB message processing: SIPFAP inbound and SIPFAP thread pool and SIB JMS RA thread pools. These are for the SIPFAP thread pool, the maximum is 50. In general, it is sufficient, but in case if you have, let's say, if you have 6 or 7 MDBs and each MDB has 10 by default, and that means it comes to the 60 MDBs are trying to get off the messages concurrently. If you have the maximum set as default 50, in case those MDBs wait until the threads are available, that delays a little bit message consumption. You have to consider all these scenarios while configuring these thread pools also. And in production, depends upon your MDBs and depends upon your connections. Revisit these and configure according to your business need. Moving to next slide number 21. Consume all messages before ME stop. If you are planning to stop a messaging engine or JVM for any reason, including for maintenance purposes or for anything, try to consume all the messages from the SIP destinations before stopping. It helps to start the messaging engine very quickly when you restart the messaging engine next time. Let's say 50,000 messages in the SIP message store and you terminated or abnormally shut down the messaging engine for any reason. ME restart takes too longer because it recreate all the messages on the queue. It does, when messaging engine starts, it does lot of housekeeping of all the messages if it is in the cache or if it is in the data store. either file store or data store. It takes too much longer if you have tons of messages in the message store. In order to avoid all these delays when you restart the messaging engine next time, please always try to consume all the messages before stopping the messaging engine. So here the best practice we tell to customer is consume all messages before ME stop. For maintenance purposes, stop the messaging engine first and then JVM. This makes proper housekeeping of messages and proper ME shutdown. Never ever shut down messaging engine abnormally. This will create a lot of pains when you restart the messaging engine next time. Not only the restart, many messages stuck and the message processing will stop. Moving to next slide, slide number 22. Message reliability versus performance. Here, please always plan your configuration carefully to achieve the maximum reliability while minimizing the complexity. Here in the middle of this slide, I have included an info knowledge center link. In SIB, we have five different types of persistence level. Out of five, three are non-persistence, best effort non-persistence, express non-persistence, reliable non-persistent. Under the persistence messages, there are two types. One is reliable persistence and assured persistence. The default persistence of the any SIG message is assured persistence. Even though this guarantees the messages will never lost, but it also has a high impact on the performance. When you choose your configuration, always make sure that what is important to you, is it important the message persistence? If you want to choose best effort non-persistence, if you want very maximum performance. But in that case, if you choose best effort non-persistence, then you may lose the message, depends upon what specific persistence you have. This info center link talks about what is more information about each persistent level. So if you go from best effort non-persistent to assured non-persistence in the downside, it will give the less speed is becomes slow, the performance is slow, but it will give you the messages best performance level for you. So here in this screen, what we suggest best practice is leave the message at the default assured persistence level. It is slower, but it's the safest option, and most cases performance using this quality of service is not an issue. In case if you have to change the default reliability level, plan your configuration carefully to achieve maximum reliability while minimizing the complexity. Also make sure that as the reliability level decreases, faster the message can be processed. So when you configure the persistence of the messages, please always consider all these parameters and go to that info center links, which talks about performance as well as under what circumstances message is persistence, and if the message is lost, why it is lost, and everything that link is documented. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 23. Messaging engine not starting. This is the way we see this issue very quite often, not only from the direct WebSphere application server customers, but also from the other stacked products. Here, these are the different reasons why the messaging engine is not starting. First, check whether the messaging engine is not deactivated. Why the messaging engine is deactivated? For example, if the message store is not available, it tries for the first 15 minutes or five times of the database connection. If it's not able to make it happen, then it deactivates the messaging engine. In that case, there are two ways to re-enable deactivated messaging engine. One is the restart the server. Most of the customers, they don't want to do it. And the other one is enable the messaging engine through the core group settings. Info Center has information about how to enable the core group settings. I have also posted a developer work question answer for this one. You can Google it or you can check in our developer works question answer. You will find out how to do this one. And check any locking issues of the message store. In case of the cluster, please always check all JVMs. In case sometimes HM manager might have started the messaging engine in the other JVM. and resolve any file store or data store issues and make sure that HA manager is enabled in case of messaging clusters. You should always make sure that HA manager is enabled in all of the JVMs of the cluster, not only for the SIP, but also for the other components of the WebSphere application server. If you configure to run the messaging engine on preferred servers only option, always make sure that there is one standby server is available, which is the preferred server, in order to fail over the messaging engine to this one, to this standby JVM. And sometimes we have the split brain or any communications issues between the ME servers in the clustered environment. Please make sure that all these, you check all these ones, and also make sure that there are no exceptions. You can check in the JVM logs of the each JVM inside of that clustered JVMs. You will find out very easily why the messaging engine is not starting. And for the this slide, I added some other useful links for some other problems quite often we see in our day-to-day job. The first link is the startup problems, and the second one is data store connectivity issues, messaging engine startup problems and their solutions, and message store issues and message flow problems. If please go to these links. It has the very vital information, and you can solve many of these problems on your own without reaching the IBM support. That saves time also for you. Next slide number 24, scaling producers. In case of the HA SIP policy, for example, if you choose HA as the policy for your environment, it creates only one messaging engine. So only one queue partition is available. When you add another messaging engine to the existing cluster, then what happens is it creates the another queue partition of the same queue in that new created messaging engine. So what that means is if you add more messaging engines, it creates the more SIP partitions of the same queue. Each queue partition behaves like the same physical queue. For example, it gets the inherit all the queue attributes, and each queue behaves as the physical queue, and you can send a lot many messages. For example, if you have three messaging engines and three queue partitions, and each queue has its 50,000 remit by default, you can send 150,000 messages without any issues. So when you add the more messaging engines, it automatically creates the additional queue partitions. Each queue partitions has the same capacity and same attributes of the normal physical queue point. The queue capacity scales linearly with the cluster. So here, but at the same time, just I wanted to make sure one more time, never ever store the messages for long-term storage. SIP is not a database. And if you add more messaging engines and configure the preferred servers to handle very large number of connections and throughput, if you have 10 messaging engines in that cluster, it creates the 10 queue partitions, and your producer application can send the messages very faster, and your throughput is improved very drastically and improves the SIP performance. Next slide number 25. Consumer MDB side tuning. Here we still see some customers use the message business to consume the messages from SIP destinations. These are very old fashions, and these message business are not efficient. From WebSphere 7 onwards, we strongly recommend all of our customers to use the activation specifications to consume the messages, which are more productive and more flexible. Here, the best practice is use activation specifications at consumer side in order to improve the message consumption and to get the better performance. Next slide number 26. Why messages are piled up on SIP destinations? We have seen this is one of the most frequent issue we see from customers. Whenever you see the messages piled up on any specific SIP destination, these are the couple of things you should check first before reaching IBM. Most of the times you can find out the solution on your own, which saves you the time. Here, the main reasons are producer is producing the messages faster than the consumer consuming the message. For example, if producer is consuming 100,000 messages per hour and consumer is consuming only 50,000 messages, so because of the inequality of the message producer and consumption, 50,000 messages are fired up on the SIP destinations. And the second one is consumer is hung or having its internal issues. If consumer is hung, it's not able to consume the messages, and it could be because of some internal exceptions. If you need to check whether on message method has any issues or any exceptions. If you see a consumer is hung, it's always good to take the Java calls, concurrent Java calls, 3 or 4, 1 minute apart, and see whether the threads are moving or not. If the threads are not moving, then the consumer is hung, and see what is the exception stack in that Java course which is not moving. That will give you the good indication what is causing the issue. And the third one is consumer is not at all running. Consumer is down and producer is keep on sending the messages, and queues are full, and the producer get the message, hey, it reached its maximum messages, and no more messages you can send from your producer side. These are the three common issues. If the messages are piled up on SIP destinations, and check all of the above, and if any of the situation applies to your message accumulation. Here, the best practices is in the activation specification configuration panel. Here in the MDB, increase the maximum concurrency of the MDB invocation per endpoint if you want to increase the maximum throughput. We will discuss this one in the later slide. And also, this increases if you the default maximum concurrency is 10 per MDB. If you increase the 20 from 10 to 20, it will create the 10 different MDBs and MDB threads, and 20 threads try to get the messages fast, and it improves the message consumption faster because you increase the MDBs, concurrent MDBs. And activate MDBs in all servers. And the third one is in the queue configuration panel, configure the message on all queue points are visible. We have seen this, the third point, very quite often. If you, the default one is the other one. If you choose these messages on other queue points, consumers from any bootstrap server can get off the messages from any queue point inside of that queue points inside of that entire bus. These are the three best practices, and these three will improve the message consumption, and you will see the performance improvement if you configure these three. Moving to next slide, slide number 27. Okay, consumer side, consumer MDB side tuning. This is what I have discussed in the previous screen, and these are the screenshots I took for the better explanation. Here in the right side under the additional one, maximum concurrent MDBs per endpoint is the default one is 10. You can increase to any number of any number here. What if you, for example, if you increase it to 20 concurrent MDBs will be created, and 20 threads will pull off the messages from the SIP destinations. It drastically improves the message consumption. In addition to this one, you make sure that you check this always activate MDBs in all servers. This will always improve the message consumption performance. Okay, if you don't, even if you deploy the MDB in all cluster, in the all cluster JVMs, if you don't choose this always activate MDBs in all servers, what happens in that case is only the local MDB where the messaging engine is running is able to consume the messages. So even if you install the MDB in a cluster, please make sure that you enable this option always activate MDBs in all servers. This drastically increases the message consumption rate. So here the best practice for you is tune your MDB thread pool to ensure it can run the maximum number of MDBs without waiting. In the previous screen, I already discussed the thread pools, the SIP thread pools. If you are increasing this maximum concurrent MDBs, make sure that your MDBs don't wait for the thread pools. For example, if you have total MDBs, 8 MDBs, and each one has 10, 80 threads become active when they try to pull off the messages. If you have the SIP thread pools only 50, 30 MDBs will wait for the thread pools to be available in order to get off the messages. So make sure that you have enough thread pools if you increase this maximum concurrent MDBs invocation per endpoint. And always make sure that one, and also configure this as per your architecture and business needs. Next, move on to next slide, slide number 28. Configuring dedicated thread pools for MDB. This is what I have discussed in the previous slide and in the starting also. Sometimes you might have seen this WSVR0629i. If you are seeing not frequent, you can ignore this one. But if you are seeing this message very quite often, that is the indication to increase SIP thread pools and you have more number of MDBs and those MDBs are waiting to get off the message. So if you see this message very quite often, you may need to check your SIP thread pools and overall thread pools for that specific JVM. So here the best practice is make sure that you have configured enough SIP JMS resource adapter thread pools available for the MDB. Tune your SIP JMS RA thread pool to ensure it can run maximum number of MDBs without waiting. If you need to increase this, you may need to revisit all the overall server-wise thread pools also, which is the screenshot I mentioned in one of the previous slides. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 29, scaling consumers. So from the consumer side, one is the MDB side tuning we need to do in order to improve the message consumption. And the other point is by default, the option is the screenshot I mentioned as two things. One is the only messages on a single queue point are visible, the first one, which is the default one. If by default, the consumers which are connected to the other messaging engines are not able to get off the messages from this queue partition. If you choose these messages on all queue points are visible, then if, for example, if one queue point has 100,000 and you have 10 different applications connected to 10 different messaging engines, all those MDBs are able to get off the messages from that single queue point, which has more number of messages. If you choose this specific option, messages on all queue points are visible. Here, the best practice is to increase the message consumption rate that messages on all queue points are visible. This makes RET consumer consumes the messages from all queue partitions wherever the messages are available. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 30. Best practices for using JMS connections. The way before hitting to the SIP component, first application need to get the connection to the JMS connection. So what happens is the connection request get connection method get try to make the request to the resource adapter to get the connection in order to connect to the JMS provider. And for any reason, if the connection is written closed or something happens wrong or hang, it go to the binary block and the connections are not properly in case if there are some exceptions happen. So it is your application responsibility to close the connections properly whenever it completed its work. If a connection exception is thrown, WebSphere does not automatically call the connection.close on behalf of your application. It is always your application responsibility to close the connection. And the application should call the connection.close method in the finally block. And you need to, there are two types of connection. One is shared and one is unshared. You need to choose which one is more suitable according to your architecture and your business need. And shared connections are transaction scope. Until the transaction is closed, connections don't go back to the free pool, even though your application called the connection.close. If you have long-running transactions, always make sure that you use unshared connections. And the other best practice in this slide is call connection.close in finally block of your application so that connection is properly closed and it goes back to the tuple so that the next connection request get the connection without any issues. Next slide, slide number 31. Best practices for workload management. In the previous slide, we have discussed some SIB component-wise best practices, how to do the workload management. Here, one of the other component, WebSphere runtime component is the workload manager, which is very important, and SIB relies on this workload management component. And make sure that in case of the clustered servers, you configure the weights equally if you want the workload management and spread the load across the different JVMs. And from the SIB perspective, TRM, the topology routing manager, is the component that does the proper routing of the SIB messaging, and this SIB TRM works based on the WLM. So always make sure that you configure the cluster JVM's workload equally across the cluster JVMs. And here, the best practice we suggest to customer is if you need the workload spread across all clusters, not only this cluster weights equal, but also from the SIB perspective-wise, you need to choose these two options, which we discussed in the previous slides. Don't prefer local queue point over the other queue points, and messages may be sent to different queue points. These are the two things you need to choose from SIB perspective, and from the WLM side, you need to configure equal weights across the clustered JVMs in case of messaging clusters. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 32. Best practices for HA. Here, in case of the clustered JVMs, we have seen some customers, they have disabled the HA function. If you disable the HA functionality, SIB messaging won't work properly in case of the failover scenarios. So always make sure that HA is enabled in all SIB clusters, and make sure that at least you have two or more messaging engines are configured, even in case if you choose the HA default messaging policy. Let's move on to next slide, slide number 33. SIB.messagestore.cache data buffer size. In case of SIB, there are two buffers. One is the cache data buffer, and the other one is discardable data buffer. And generally, whenever the messages are arrived, or for the producing side or from the consuming side, from the producing side, the messages are first stored in memory. In memory, that means the cache. This cache has a limited size, and the default setting could possibly be insufficient if you, in case of the production, if you have heavily loaded environments. The purpose of this cache data buffer is to optimize the performance of the messaging engine by caching the memory of the data that the messaging engine might otherwise have to read from the data store. Read or write to the data store, or read from the data store. So generally, the cached buffer size contains the data which the QoS, which is quality of service attributes, is better than best effort non-persistence. Only there are, other than this best effort non-persistent, there are four other persistent errors. If you choose any of those persistent errors, this cached data buffer size is used. These messages, once the messages are spilled from the heap, and then those messages are returned to the data store when this memory cache is exhausted. And these are the two settings. Depends upon your performance and your speed. You may need to increase if you have too heavily loaded environment. You may need to revisit and reconfigure these two settings. Parameters you can set in order to improve the performance. And when you increase these, please make sure that because these are taken directly from the heap, if you are increasing, consider to increase the heap of that specific JVMs also. This is the best practice we give when you in case of the cache data buffer size. Next slide, slide number 34. This is another data buffer size which SIB uses, discardable data buffer size. The discardable data buffer size refers to the data which the quality of service attributes is the best effort non-persistence. There is a big paragraph in this slide. In short, what I would like to say is only this discardable data buffer size, only these best effort non-persistent messages are stored, and these messages are never stored to the data store or file store. If it needs more data, then it will delete the previous transactions, but it never delete the current active transactions. If you are using these non-persistent messages, then you may need to increase this discardable data buffer size. This is the default value, 320K, and here the best practice is increase the size of the discardable data buffer, and which allows more best effort non-persistent data to be handled before messaging engine begins to discard the messages. Next to slide, slide number 35. These are custom properties. The first link is the developer work blog I posted. This blog contains custom properties which are related to the SIB, and you need to, most of the times when you configure properly these custom parameters, you can resolve many of your issues. And in this blog, I mentioned what is the purpose of this one and under what circumstances you need to configure these custom properties. The second link is the complete system, the complete SIB custom properties, which is the link directly from the knowledge center. Next to slide, slide number 36. And this is one of the major issues we get not only from the WebSphere customers, but also most frequently from the BPM and other stacked products. Even though the messaging engine is running, we see this message CWSIT0103E. So I have created a good blog how to debug this issue with the step-by-step walkthrough instructions. If you go to this blog, it will walk you where to start and what to check and how to debug the issue. Everything, it has step-by-step instructions. If you go to this blog, 90% of this issue you can resolve on your own.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for a great presentation. Now it's time to move on to the question and answer session. The first question came in on slide number 5 from Jeff, and it says, is it a bad idea to have multiple engines in one server? And then he expanded this question to, if I have a cluster with one node because I can't afford another node yet, can I run additional message engines to the one node for scalability? Not high availability, obviously, as long as the OS can handle it.
Yeah. Hey, Jeff. So here what you meant was you have only one node, and if you would like to have more messaging engines, yes, you can have more messaging engines. If you have only one node, then what I suggest you is add one or more JVMs, so that if JVM has any issues, it can fail over to the other JVMs. So even in one node, you can create multiple JVMs and add those JVMs to the cluster and create more messaging engines to handle the load. So to answer that question is, even if you have only one single node restriction, you can create the multiple JVMs and you can add the messaging engines to that one. And in the worst case, if you have only one JVM, you can still add the messaging engines, but make sure that the JVM is always available to run the messaging engines.
The next question came in on slide 7. The question was, where is the JVM heap settings for performance setting at? Where is that setting at?
Yeah, there are two ways to configure this JVM settings. One is when you add the JVMs to the bus, or when you add the cluster to the bus. And in addition to that one, if you already created that one, the other option is you can go to the JVM process definition. That is the other way you can add those specific server JVM process definition. And in that one, you can change the minimum and maximum heap size there. And the third option is you can always add, by using the command line, -xmx and -xms options, you can add to the JVM by starting These are the three different options.
At this time, there are no more questions in the group chat or on the phone, so we will conclude the presentation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, John C., for presenting.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Thank you very much all for joining the presentation and attending.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you so much for your participation.